Blog Talk Radio.
This is the RF Radio Show with OJ and Dreadfish.
Good evening, everyone. It's 6:30 Eastern Time, and you're listening to Radio RF. I'm Dreadfish.
And I'm Ida OJ.
And together is Radio RF.
That is it.
Almost got it. So, how are you doing lately?
I'll be honest. I'm a little doom and gloom today with the environmental issues that I've been talking about. So I'm probably going to pass. I don't feel like just a bunch of fear-mongering. You know, I was just looking at some bad statistics and thinking about them.
Yeah.
You know that'll do today.
That's generally something I'm concerned about, but I don't see myself in a position to do anything about it, so I just kind of accept it. Except that I do my little things here and there to reduce carbon footprints, but, you know. So,
well, can
yeah.
I ask you a question? And this is a question I'm struggling with myself right now. I almost never think about things in a black or white kind of mentality, but recently I'm starting to wonder if you're either part of the problem or you're a part of the solution. Like, the people who are apathetic or even the people who care but aren't necessarily making necessary changes, like, you're continuing to support a system, and I am too myself currently, that is the problem, and thus we are part of the problem.
Yeah, I've kind of thought about that some in this context, too, and it kind of seems like it is a bit black and white. Like, if you're not actively making an effort to change, say, your carbon footprint, you know, and how much you're outputting, then you're basically part of the problem by not changing and by staying in the system that we're using now, which is detrimental. Go ahead.
Part of the reason why I'm trying to get myself out of this system, you know, I've been studying for the last 2 years, teaching myself and learning what I can, and really seeing how I feel and think and interested in these particular topics. And, you know, I'm looking into, you know, moving into a more sustainable kind of lifestyle in the future. I'm hoping next year, actually. But, you know, I've got a lot of details to work out.
Yeah, I'm not in a position to do too much to change, like, you know, how sustainable my lifestyle is. In general, though,
you can
like
move
as far
on.
As, you know, like, one
you
of the things I always do is if I go out of town, I unplug everything. I usually watch TV in the mornings, but I unplug it or I turn the power strip off whenever I'm not using it because it's not a whole lot, I guess, but TVs do use a good little electricity to turn off.
The reason why TVs actually have to, why TVs have power even when they're off is because of a clicker. In order for a clicker to be able to turn on the TV needs to have power to be able to receive the signal from your clicker or your remote controller. I realize it might be the clicker. People are like, what's a clicker? I meant the remote control, if that wasn't clear. Which I thought was really interesting. So our own laziness is the reason why we're absorbing so much power.
Yeah, I think about that a lot. Like, I try not to leave lights on, even though apparently regular house lights really absorb, they use a very minuscule amount of electricity. But, you know, if I'm not using a light, I turn it off usually. And, you know, I unplug things when I go out of town. You know, just little things, really. And I guess I try not to use too much gas when I'm driving, partly just because I don't have money, you know. And so it's also a fuel economy thing for my sake. But, you know, driving smart can help, too. You know, the way you accelerate and decelerate really determines how much gas you use. So it's the little things. Like, besides becoming an activist and doing things on a larger scale as individuals, we can only do the little things, you know? It's a matter of the little things adding up in groups of people, and that's making a difference, I think.
I mean, I really hate to be, like, negative about it, but I kind of disagree. These little differences we try to make mean nothing when we have an entire industrial system doing the exact opposite. And until our industrial complex embraces a more ecologically friendly model, the changes you or I make within that system are negligible at best.
Yeah.
I mean, I think are necessary things that people have to do. Part of it is discovering a mentality that is beneficial. Part of it is making a social statement. The more we start acting and thinking in green-friendly ways, the more it's going to become apparent that the system simply has to change to adapt to what the people want. So these behaviors do make a huge impact, and I suggest everyone do them. I just don't think they're the answer.
Yeah, I think you're right. It is a matter of the system itself changing, because we're all just conforming to the system that we have, you know. And not conforming is just, you know, not really contributing to system, but it's not changing the system necessarily unless a large enough people decide they don't want the system anymore, like you're saying. So, yeah, it is a matter of really changing the infrastructure in the system. And that's, it's got to be proven to be worth it, especially monetarily, because the big companies don't want to give up what they've got, you know. So the practicality and the, I can't think of the word, but the money's worth that they can get out of it, those have to be proven, I think, for certain parties, like in the government and in big companies, to really change.
I'm going to put this out there. I also think that it's not going to be economically damaging for us to change in a positive way. One, the amount of technological innovation that we can strive to create in our culture. I mean that's a huge impact on what a business can do and how they continue to make money by striving to implement environmental changes and technologies that are better suited to our needs. I think one of the biggest places that really need change is our agricultural system, and we'll be going more into that in another episode, though.
Yeah, I do agree. I do agree. So,
ahead. I have one last thought. It's also beneficial to businesses because the things we're destroying now are our resources. We are destroying our resource base in a way that's not sustainable. If we find a sustainable way to use our resources and work with them, but it'll be beneficial, as in there'll be more resources to use and utilize, and they'll be there longer.
You know, I think we ought to do, just like with the globalization and culture thing, we ought to do a panel discussion about just not just environmentalism, but maybe like alternative energy and that sort of thing. That would be pretty interesting.
That is a good idea. And speaking of panel discussions, we do have one planned. Sort of started on the gun control debate, so that should be a lot of fun. We'll do the panel discussion stuff, so hopefully it doesn't get too heated. It's definitely one of those topics, so I'm pretty excited to cover it.
Yeah, and we'll do our best to keep everything civil. A good discussion debate has always got to be civil in some way, so, yeah.
Now, Dremelec, who is going to be on with us for the 17th episode, most likely on the 22nd. Wanted you to talk a little bit about your music stuff you've been got going on. I know you had practice today. You recently got a new drum set. You were mentioning open mic night.
Yeah. So we're just doing another open mic night tonight. There's a place that does them on Mondays. We didn't last Monday because I'm thinking last Monday was Memorial Day. It was either last Monday or the Monday before that. We had reasons. Anyway, we'll be doing it tonight. Everybody has time for about two songs. Though lately, when we've been going, even just to listen, they don't have a lot of bands. They're usually solo people and actually a few comedians, which pretty hit or miss, you know. But it's kind of funny to watch grassroots comedy there. Doing that, practicing twice a week. I'm getting better at drums. The last few days, I've been a little bit off. I think it's partly because I've been exercising a lot. My arms just aren't really moving as fast as I need them to. But so it's going well. We have a band T-shirt, and a friend of ours made them before we had our gig at a festival last month, I think it was, which I mentioned on the show. And so we had a few of those. She made them for us. She works at a screen printing place, and I was wearing one of them today and got a comment on it. You know, somebody thinks it's cool, you know, ask what it is, that sort of thing. And it's pretty cool. It works great for publicity because, you know, it's just interesting enough that somebody wants to know what it is. And he'd say, oh, it's my band T-shirt. You know, I have a band that's called this. And My band's called The Stress Exchange, by the way. I think we are on... I'm not big on the social media stuff, so I don't keep up with that, but I think we have a Facebook and an Instagram. I'm not sure. Not my business there. But, so yeah, and we will try to get some recordings soon. We've got some really rough-sounding ones, and they're not good takes either. I'm a perfectionist, so they're not quite good enough for me, but I want to play something on here pretty soon. If we can remember, we're going to try to record tonight's open mic night with our phones at least. We keep forgetting, so hopefully that'll go well.
We're all really excited for that. You know, we should make Radio RF t-shirts.
That'd be cool. Yeah, I like
that. You know the blue police box that, you know, is iconic of a Doctor Who?
Yeah, the TARDIS box.
TARDIS is so popular, and Doctor Who is so popular that the rights to the blue police box, which is obviously originally a police box, is owned not by, you know, the police or the state or the country or whatever, but it's owned actually by BBC now. What I want is for Radio RF to get so popular that we own RF related forms and all its bitches.
That'd be funny. That'd be cool. Maybe we'll get big someday. Someday. If you broadcast, they will come.
Now, we still have a competition going on. I still have an Ida OJ bracelet that you can win by calling 646-200-4733. Again, that's 646-200-4733. Originally, the competition was to ask what band reference I made a few episodes ago. But we're well past that, and the answer was the President of the United States of America. I made a reference to the song Peaches, and I forgot what the other song I made a reference to. That's not good. Mm-hmm. I apologize. Now, every episode ever to figure that out.
So, do you get a bracelet since you can't remember the song?
Yes. So, someone gets to win a bracelet just by calling in.
Cool.
What happens if we had a dread necklace? Would you call in for a dreadfish necklace?
I would.
You would, okay.
Yeah.
All right, well,
yeah,
What was that? No, you got it.
Well, I was about to say, speaking of that, I'm kind of thinking of formally changing my forum name to Fisho because that's cool.
Do it.
Works. It's my Aussie forum name, so I might do that. I finally have a name that's cool enough to change to. So I might do that one. If you have an opinion on it, call in and let us know.
At 646-200-4733.
That's right. 646-200-4733.
So I'm thinking I should probably start introducing tonight's episode. And tonight's episode is part of our Summer of the Black Flame, which we're covering various aspects of the left-handed path. And today's particular topic is Luciferianism. Now, I had wanted to do Luciferianism next week because next week is my birthday, and I'm a Luciferian, so it just seemed more apt, but it didn't work out. Our Satanist wasn't able to call in this Monday, and luckily today's guest was able to come in. So I guess I should explain to what Luciferianism is to me, or how I understand it, or how I use it. I'll probably say some stuff that's pretty different from what our guests will say and what other people will say on this topic. But Lucifer is basically a light bearer, or a bearer of truth or light. I'll just say it as a light, as like a torch bearer. Personally, I use the imagery and ideas from the Prometheus story, you know, stole fire from the gods and brought it to humanity, to kind of understand what I mean when I think of like Lucifer and Luciferianism. And I don't believe in a Lucifer as a thing that exists or a being that exists, but I actually believe it's an archetype, and I believe it's an archetype that we as human beings can achieve, and I believe that I'm a Lucifer. Part of that, to what that means to me, is that part of my magical practice is doing magic for other people and teaching magic to other people. Outside of that, I mean, I think my being a moderator on religious forums and hosting this radio show is an expression of my Lucifer, my Lucifer nature, as well as the way I try to champion science, environmental issues, and you know, my interest in humanism and charitable works, I believe, are all aspects of Luciferian path to me.
Yeah, this is an interesting topic to me, and I like your take on Luciferianism. I've read a decent enough amount to get an idea, and I like it. And so, you know, I'm looking forward to hearing what our guest has to say today.
So I'm going to bring our guest on, and I think the first thing I want to work on is clearing up some misconceptions. So I'd like to introduce Jeremy Crow. Welcome to Radio RF.
Hello. How's it going? Thanks for having me on.
Thanks
for being a part of the show. So I think the thing I wanted to start with, clearing up misconceptions. I think the biggest misconception is, first off, that Lucifer is and that Lucifer comes from the...
Sorry, you were breaking up there. Could you repeat that?
Okay, so I want to start by clearing up some misconceptions, and I think the two biggest misconceptions are that Lucifer and Satan are one and the same, and that Lucifer comes from the Bible.
Okay, yeah. Lucifer is actually a word that predates the predates Christianity in general. Now, most people who think of Lucifer, often they think of the Bible quote from Isaiah. Now, just one thing that I like to say is that, just think about this for a minute. If Isaiah was written in Hebrew, why is a Latin word in there? Because Lucifer is a Latin word. And the reason it's in there is not because the author wrote Lucifer. The author wrote a Hebrew word, and then that was later translated into Latin, and the Latin word that they used was Lucifer. Now, in that Latin version of the Bible called the Vulgate, the word Lucifer is found several times throughout, including times when Jesus is referring to himself as Lucifer. So it was clearly not intended to be this devil figure, you know, originally when they translated into Latin. It's a concept or an archetype or, a type of force, I suppose you could call it, but not, it's not supposed to be what folklore has now developed around it, referring to it as this fallen angel, as per Milton's Paradise Lost, which doesn't actually refer to Lucifer, refers to Satan. Anyways, there's a lot of folklore that has built up around it, but the word Lucifer was used because the Romans used that word to describe celestial phenomenon. The morning star, which is actually Venus, the planet Venus, as the last bright object in the sky before the sun rises. So it's kind of like it holds out against all the other stars, and when you see just that one, you know, bright object or what appears to be a star in the sky, just before the sun rises, the sky is turning blue and everything, there's just that one star there. It kind of is like a herald of the sun or a herald of the dawn, where it's kind of, in a sense, bringing forth the light of day, or a messenger of the light, in a sense. And so that word light bringer, which is the literal translation of Lucifer, was used. Lucifer was the word used. And so when it eventually got translated into English, that was the only place that the translators decided to keep that Latin word untranslated into English. They could have said, you know, morning star, or actually some versions do have it translated into English if you look at it, but a lot of fundamentalist Christians will use only the King James Version of the Bible because somehow they've got it they've got the belief, I don't know, not sure where this comes from, but the belief that the King James Version of the Bible is a divinely inspired translation into English and the only version. I have my own speculation on why I think that that one is insisted upon being used. I think that it might have something to do with the fact that it requires the highest reading level out of any other translation of the Bible, and therefore the preacher can control the interpretation a little better. But yeah, it was a word that was used before any of the associations with Satan were made. That was done later on. People made connections between a bunch of different passages in the Bible that reference Satan, falling stars, and this Lucifer word in the King James Version, to connect it all together and say that Lucifer and Satan are the same thing. And then they connected it with Milton's Paradise Lost, and other stories came up around that as well. And that's why it's considered to be identical with Satan in a lot of people's minds, but that's not originally how it was. And for a very long time, Lucifer was not considered Satan. And actually, even in the Roman Catholic Church, Lucifer is still not a word that is considered identical with Satan. There was even a bishop that took on the ecclesiastical name of Lucifer. And he became a saint later. There's a saint day, a feast day for that saint in the Roman Catholic Church. I think it was like May 20th or something like that. Saint Lucifer's Day, and that's still in the actual Roman Catholic calendar. Now, some people, of course, will say, "Oh, well, that's because it's secretly satanic." But you know, people are always going to say something along those lines. Now, the way that I take Lucifer and the way that most Luciferians take it is in more the sense of the literal meaning of light bringer as kind of an archetype of the bringer of light, light being a universal symbol of knowledge and truth since, you know, time immemorial. And to bring the light or to bear the light is, you know, to reveal the truth in a sense, or to be aware of it at least. And it connects with illuminism. And you'll see sometimes Freemasons will occasionally have the word Lucifer written in a book and referenced positively. Or not just Freemasons, but like Madame Blavatsky of the Theosophical Society, the founder of the Theosophical Society, or Albert Pike, or Manly P. Hall. You know, they didn't mean, when they were talking about Lucifer, they didn't mean Satan. They were referring to the force of enlightenment, essentially.
Now, pretty cool. There's a lot of important concepts to Luciferianism. Some of them that are, I guess, not necessarily unique to itself, but I mean, the idea of apophis or autotheism is talked about often in Luciferianism. Could you go into what that is?
Right.
And why that is?
Yeah. Because Luciferianism has its roots in, you know, free thinking society, like the free thinkers and libertines and illuminism, and ultimately it connects with what we call the left hand path. And that whole kind of movement is structured around freeing yourself from this idea that you are subject to an external force, that some external force is going to punish you for or reward you for doing certain things, that it takes away your own responsibility for your own life, really, I mean, obviously there's elements of luck and there's things that other people can do to influence your life, but you are the ultimate sovereign over your own decisions and your own actions, that you ultimately have the power to choose how to act in any given situation. You have the power to act on various thoughts and emotions that arise within yourself, and nobody else has the power to make you do otherwise if that's your decision. And the other thing is that it frees you from the idea that's very popular, that you hear that God has a plan or that there is a universal purpose of nature is driving toward a certain purpose, you know, and that we're subject to that plan or that purpose, and that if things didn't go the way that we intended, that it wasn't part of God's plan, that what you wanted to manifest wasn't part of God's plan, or God had a higher purpose for you than that, and so it failed, or something along those lines. But this kind of disregards that and says, well, really, you shouldn't just submit to that, that really, you know, if you really want something to happen, that you should either, you know, reconsider why you wanted it to happen, and maybe you realize that there's something else that is more important, or maybe you're going after what you really wanted in the wrong way, or maybe you just need to work harder. And you ultimately you become the god of yourself, of your own life and your own decisions. And this leads to an even more kind of esoteric interpretation as well, in that you can even actually aspire to become a god in your own right, in a sense, a force in the universe in your own right, that you can act and make a difference in the world, to make your mark on the world, to become an influence in the way that the universe operates, in a sense. Not that you're going to be changing the laws of gravity or things like that, but that you would have an influence in how things unfold.
Okay. Now, we've got a song to play today. Do you want to introduce your band and the song we're playing today?
Sure, yeah. It's called Pleasure the Priestess is the band name. And the song that I gave you to play there is called Make True.
Okay. I'm still having issues on my browser, so Dreadfist, why don't you play that for us?
I got it.
Thank you. Welcome back, guys. So as you know, if you're just turning in right now, we're interviewing Jeremy Crow about Luciferianism, and earlier I spoke about my own opinions on that. We just played a song about his. And the, what was that called again?
Make True.
By Pleasure the Police. Wow, sorry.
Pleasure the Priestess, yeah.
Try saying that five times fast.
We usually just say PTP.
That's cool.
I like it. Okay, so we've covered so far how Luciferianism is different from Christianity, or how it really isn't related to Christianity, and how Lucifer and Satan aren't the same thing. We've talked about, you know, autotheism. We've talked about Luciferianism, you know, what the symbolism of Lucifer. Now, our friend Adremelech, talking to you while we were paused, brought up the term black flame. I feel, I mean, while it's obviously seen as part of Luciferianism, I feel in a lot of ways that Luciferianism differs in the sense that it's not the black flame, it's exposed, whereas the black flame remains hidden. Does that make any sense to you?
Yeah. Just to get back to what we were talking about before, I want to say that autotheism is basically the being the sovereign of your own decisions and your own life, taking responsibility for your own life and your own power, your own failures and your own successes as well, taking also, of course, taking into account chance and other influences outside. But and then the more esoteric aspect of that, the taking it even further, becoming immortal, becoming a deity or a force in your own right in the universe, that would be apotheosis. So okay. Now, to get to the black flame, that is a concept that I think is really interesting. When I think of black flame, I always think of this term, darkness visible. Have you heard that before?
No, actually, I haven't.
So there's two places that I've encountered it in, you know, classic sources. One of them is actually in Milton's Paradise Lost, where when Satan falls into hell, the fires there don't so much give off light, but darkness visible. And the other place that I encountered that was in the third degree initiation rite in Freemasonry, where they say that the light of a master mason is actually darkness visible. And I thought that was kind of interesting, and I had to kind of think about it and contemplate on it for a while. And I kind of see that as the truth that's hiding in the darkness, in a sense. So you have darkness, which is essentially ignorance. And the things that we do not understand are often the things that we fear. That fear actually creates a barrier that prevents us or discourages us from exploring it. But there's a lot of truth hidden in that darkness. And part of the quest, I believe, is to go in and courageously explore that darkness, the taboo, the unknown, you know, the rejected and the forbidden. And these are things that actually contain a lot of insight and knowledge and truth, you know. There's a famous quote that saying the truth, When saying the truth is a radical act, you know that you're living in dark ages, right? So there's also institutionalized darkness, in a sense, where there are certain taboo subjects that you're not allowed to talk about because they make people feel uncomfortable. But
issues.
Pardon?
There you go.
Sorry. I've been ranting about environmental issues, and I thought that was a perfect example of what he's talking about, of institutional darkness. And I mean, in our current culture, it's taboo. States or buildings in states where you can't even mention global warming. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah.
Personal ranting.
Oh yeah,
sorry.
Definitely. That's an example of it right there. Another thing would be on a personal level. A lot of times you have. You know, traumas, and a trauma is essentially something that you didn't have the mental and emotional faculties to deal with at the time that it happened. And so you develop a complex, which is, in a sense, a coping mechanism or a workaround that the brain kind of suppresses that and works around it, in a sense, suppresses that information and creates a workaround for it so that it kind of protects the psyche that's not strong enough to handle it at the time. But a lot of these happen when we were kids, and as we become adults, we've actually developed the mental and emotional faculties to deal with it, but we don't, because it's still there in this kind of dark place within us. It's just like a skeleton within our internal closet, in a sense. And there's a lot of work that can be done, you know, even through conventional methods like psychotherapy or whatever, where you can go back and revisit that trauma, but then also use the mental and emotional faculties that you've developed as an adult to actually process it and integrate it. And it kind of unravels that complex, and it kind of brings what was once in the darkness into the light, or take the light out of the darkness, in a sense. Take the truth out of the suppressed kind of hidden part of yourself. And that frees up a lot of mental stress. Like, it's almost like you have a muscle that's just constantly tensed, right? There's a mental tension that's released when you no longer have to keep that suppressed or hidden. And ultimately, I mean, that's a big part of the work. And I see that as all connected to this idea of the black flame, that there's this part of you that is just wants to come out. It just wants to, it doesn't want to be growing twisted in the dark. It wants to come out and see the sun, you know. It wants to be part of who you are as a person, but you are suppressing it. And that's just on a personal level. There's also the macrocosmic levels of it, where, as I said, an entire society can have these complexes, in a sense.
Absolutely. And I think we're seeing that all too often in our current society with one too many issues. Now, I wanted to explore the concept of magic from a Luciferian perspective. Now, we talked briefly about the idea of black magic in a previous episode, but is black magic applied to how you view the magic system within a personal Luciferian's path? And this might differ per Luciferian.
I don't really use the term black magic, dark magic maybe, but which would be more in terms of exploring and utilizing the things that have been taboo or have been made taboo or forbidden, you know, and it kind of taps into that black flame, if you will, the darkness visible. So you could call it dark magic, in a sense, where it's not entirely dark, but it's working with forces that maybe evoke some uncomfortable or fearful feelings when at first, until you become comfortable with it and you understand it and you can integrate it. But I don't think that magic in a Luciferian context would always be dark magic. You know, I actually see Luciferianism as kind of, I prefer to use the term complete path rather than left-hand path, because when people hear the term left-hand path, they think that it automatically is the polar opposite of the right-hand path, which, you know, the whole, the language of it itself lends people to that conclusion, obviously, right? Left and right. So, but the thing is, with the right-hand path, typically you'll see a lot of behavior that shuns the darkness, shuns exploring forbidden knowledge. Like, there is forbidden knowledge in the right-hand path. There are things that you're not supposed to look into or explore or expose yourself to information, even. And that's what I call that, the darkness, this forbidden knowledge. Whereas in the, what most people call the left-hand path, you not only explore the darkness and that forbidden knowledge, but you also do works of light. It's not just purely white light work like in the right-hand path. It's both. And so I like to call it the complete path. Now, if you were to just entirely focus on the darker sides of things and never involve anything to do with love, for instance, then that would be an incomplete path as well. And that would be more like what a lot of, what some people misinterpret the left-hand path as. As pure darkness. And so, yeah, well, I like to refer to it as a, yeah. So I think that, you know, there's a place for works of light and a courageous exploration of the darkness in Luciferianism. And so that's why I like to call it the complete path.
Okay. Now, I believe Dreadfish had a question for you. Dreadfish?
I'm back now.
Okay, he's here.
Yes. I don't know if you got my message. Okay. Ready for my question?
Sorry, I stepped away, actually. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I let you know that I stepped away as well. Okay, yes. So one thing I had noticed looking at some of the imagery is that it looks a little bit similar to some alchemical imagery. And so I wondered, and I get the idea of light and that sort of thing also seems similar. So I wondered if there was some kind of connection in any way between Luciferianism and alchemy.
Yeah, I definitely think so. I mean, I'm just one person. There's no, Luciferianism is not a dogmatic religion, you know, so different people have different interpretations of things and different ways of approaching it. My way of approaching it is heavily influenced by alchemy, both Hermetic alchemy and Taoist internal alchemy. Those are two huge influences on the way that I approach what I call Luciferianism. And a lot of it comes back to that whole autotheism and especially apotheosis of becoming godlike. And I think that, you know, if you think of the classic goals of alchemy, you have the Philosopher's Stone and the Elixir of Life, which are actually two names for the same thing, just two different functions of the same thing. The Philosopher's Stone is used to turn base metals into gold, and with that you would have unlimited wealth at your disposal, and that is essentially, you know, you'd be able to manifest basically whatever you wanted to in the world. And the Elixir of Life, that obviously leads to extreme longevity or even immortality. And so if you had the two, you would have, you know, the ability to live forever and to have a massive influence on the world. And so those are two massive goals that the alchemists had, and that is also something that is sought after in Luciferianism. So I actually use a lot. I've studied and practiced a lot of alchemy, like as I said, especially in the traditions of the Hermetic tradition and the Taoist.
Mm-hmm.
They both take different approaches, but there's a lot of similarity in the basic concepts that they have behind them. And a lot of that has to do with taking the core aspects of something, often yourself, and refining them or purifying them, and then combining them harmoniously. So what I like to call that is the complete harmonized self. So I don't like talking about higher self, and I think that the word higher self, again, that leads to like a dichotomy. It leads to dualistic thinking. If there's a higher self, then obviously there's a lower self. You know, by definition, you can't have a higher self without a lower self, because it's a referential type of adjective, higher, right?
Yeah.
So what is this lower self? Is it a less worthy self? And why, like, because if you're trying to manifest or focus on the higher self, then this lower self is obviously less worthy or something like that, right? Or garbage. And so it's just another way of taking part of yourself and suppressing it, right? Or degrading it. Or downgrading its value. I think that the better thing to do is to understand all aspects of ourself and to harmonize them, to get them all working toward common goals. All the different parts of the self, if they can get working in their own unique way toward common goals, then it'll harmonize the activity of all the different parts of the self until you get to the point where you have the complete harmonized self, which is essentially the quintessence. And the quintessence is what the philosopher's stone and elixir of life are made out of.
Now, you mentioned Taoism, and I know Taoism is actually a part of my path as well, and I've noticed that a lot of other Luciferians, people I know, and just in general LHP people, are influenced by Taoism. Could you quickly expand upon that?
Sure. I mean, the way that I approach it is I don't get as much into the philosophy of Taoism myself. I focus more on the internal alchemy aspect of it. But it has that same concept that you want to be as healthy as you can and fully functioning. And if you can get the different parts working in harmony, then it actually creates different, how do I say this? There's, when you get like an organism, say a single-celled organism, it has certain functions that it can perform. But then when you get into multi-celled organisms, different emergent qualities show up, such as consciousness. So when you have like different complex parts working together in harmony, you're able to have different emergent qualities. And I think part of this is that we can activate more of our potential if we can get all the different parts of ourselves in harmony.
I like that analogy. That makes sense.
Now, we have about 10 minutes left, so do you have any closing thoughts?
Well, I think that one thing that's important You mentioned that you wanted me to go over what I thought the difference between Satanism and Luciferianism is. I mean, we already established that it's not really the same character. It's not the same mythological character, but the actual practice of Luciferianism and Satanism, I think the main thing that differentiates it is the whole bringer of light aspect, that you're not just looking out for yourself, but that you want to bring the light. You don't want to just hoard the light, you know, for yourself and for your own gratification, that it's something that you want to kind of influence the world with, that you want to bring this light to light and put it out there for people who are looking for it. You don't want to, you know, shove it in people's faces necessarily, but if people are looking for it, you want it to be accessible to them. And
Luciferianism is the most humanistic of all the left-handed path practices.
Yeah, in Luciferianism, there's a love for humanity and the love of this world, you know, that you want to leave it in a better place than you found it.
I mentioned Prometheus.
You know, empower people. Yeah, like Prometheus, you want to empower others with knowledge. It's not just about giving people fish, you know, and like every week you give them a fish, you teach them how to fish, like as the old saying goes. You want to empower them. You don't want to just, you don't want to patronize them. You know, you don't want to just continue feeding them and they be dependent on you. You want to actually empower them to be able to take care of themselves, if possible.
That actually reminds me of something to go into real quick. We were talking about that. I'm in an online teaching course, and I had mentioned that I think the most important thing anybody can learn is critical thinking, because with critical thinking, you learn how to teach yourself, you know? And I think it goes along mm-hmm. the exact same thing. You know, you're teaching somebody how to
yes.
fish. What better to teach somebody than how to teach themselves?
Yes, definitely.
Okay, did you have more to add? I was actually going to bring on our friend to see if he had a question for you at the end of the episode.
Oh, sure.
Okay. All right, well, this is Abimelech.
He's
Ian. Hey.
Yeah, I was wanting to ask you, you agree with the point that the point of evolution, the point of the black flame is to give us the insight and to create a better bow, a better way of gaining better game. To create a better bow, to create a better machine, to create a better computer, to create a better mind, better, more understanding, a more understanding of things in the universe, understanding of ourselves and the universe.
Yeah, I think it's definitely connected with the whole insatiable curiosity that I think that
right.
most Luciferians embody, that insatiable questioning, that wanting to know why and how, and to strive to make things better, to make it make, you know, there's a lot of things that don't make any sense. And Luciferians right. have that drive to say, hey, that doesn't make sense. Why isn't it like this, you know? And to really understand the answer to that question, and if they find something better, to try and get it put into place, to get it to activate that, to manifest it, for sure.
Do you think that the black flame is what gives us a recognition of what beauty is, to give us an understanding of what is beauty? How do we understand what beauty is? What is beauty? And or, yeah, to give us an understanding of anything in existence.
Not necessarily beauty. I think beauty can be had with, you can be completely ignorant of everything and remain ignorant of everything, but still appreciate things as beautiful. So I wouldn't say that, no. Personally, I wouldn't connect the black.
Well, that's interesting.
You know,
I kind of sort of, yeah, in a way I agree, and in a way I sort of disagreed, but.
Dremelik, I think your question would be better stated if you looked at it as the creative force behind creating things of beauty. And in that case, I think I would agree with the statement.
Yes. Yes, I would say that
okay.
for sure.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Me too. You know, I'm one out here. I'm trying to understand. I'm trying to figure things out myself. And this has been a very enlightening Luciferian episode for me, personally.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Well, I'm involved in a couple of projects. One that's really taken off lately is the Greater Church of Lucifer. And that's a project that actually is not getting involved in the deep occult aspects of it, but just kind of exploring the philosophy and lifestyle of Luciferianism. And then there are other vehicles that people can explore if they're interested in the more occult aspects of things, such as, for example, I'm involved with the Ordo Luciferi, which is more of a self-initiation type, self-guided path with guideposts. And then I've also launched another group called the Ziggurat of Enki, which is more almost like a sort of open source version, kind of a left-hand path or complete path version of Freemasonry, but with a lot less controls over it. A lot more freedoms given to the individual practitioners. So that's just a couple of things I wanted to mention as well, if people want to look for more information.
And we have those.
We have, Yes, we have those linked in the description, as we were both trying to say. We have four of your links and also the link for your bands on Word. Thank you very much for being on the show. This is it's been enlightening. It's been a cool topic. I definitely appreciate it. This has been very interesting. I've enjoyed it.
Oh, yeah, thanks for having me on. I really enjoyed talking with you guys about it.
And maybe, again, we'll have something to talk about and have you on in the future. We'll see.
I'd definitely be open to that, for sure.
All right.
And join RF. We can talk to you
yes.
there. People have a lot
okay.
of things that do.
And so coming up this Thursday, we'll be doing our show about cooking. I know Itzy and I both do cooking. I don't do a lot of formal cooking. I don't do recipes, but I experiment with things that might taste good, or mainly because I try to integrate as much nutrition into everything I eat, so I just throw stuff together and decide something tastes good.
When I mentioned
I
mentioned in chat the other day that the episode is going to be about cooking, and everyone asked if Bible Student was going to be a part of that episode because he is a master griller. So now,
maybe we can convince comments.
No, we have the rest of this month actually completely planned out. So next week's supposed to be, or next Monday is going to be Satanism. And then the Thursday after that, we're going to do something on wild foods. And then the next Monday, we're either doing occultism or Thelma. Did I pronounce that right?
Thelma.
Thelma.
It's not actually a left-handed path, but it's mostly associated with it quite frequently. So it kind of makes sense to lump it with this series. And then the next Thursday that, we're also going to do another gardening or permaculture episode.
Sounds good. I think we'll have a lot of interesting stuff this month. So far we have.
I agree. Well, with that, I guess it's time to say good night, good morning, and good afternoon.
And good now.